Welcome to the Building Stories podcast series. My name is Amy Barnes, and I'll be your host as we explore some of Ontario's built heritage. This series will include 15 podcasts in total, so if you enjoyed today's show, be sure to check out some of the others. Each podcast is going to explore a different topic related to heritage conservation in different regions of Ontario. The podcast will include a brief history of the building, interviews with people who have some connection to this space, but the ultimate goal is to try and tell stories about the buildings, stories about the space that most people don't know. Each one is going to be different, because the truth is, each building has a different past, and each building has a different story to tell us. So without further ado, let's get started on today's topic. On today's podcast, we are going to explore a different sort of space, found all over the world and considered sacred to most. It is the kind of place that can evoke every kind of human emotion. It's typically associated with sorrow, yet at the same time can be one of the most peaceful and beautiful places on earth. We are going to explore the cemetery. Today we're going to talk specifically about Union Cemetery, found in the quaint town of Port Hope, Ontario. Port Hope is located at the mouth of the Ganaraska River and lies on the north shores of Lake Ontario. With a population of approximately 16,000 people, there are 8 cemeteries that serve the town. Now, in 1873, the noted landscape architect H.A. Engelhart was consulted to create a cemetery. His vision involved open areas, mature trees, flower beds that would attract birds and insects to create an overall peaceful place. The vision was realized in 1874, and Union Cemetery has been in operation ever since, serving the community. In its early days, one can easily imagine a horse and buggy traveling along a dirt road. Following behind it would be grieving family and friends, mourning the loss of a loved one. Now, sadly, many would be weeping for children that were lost in some of the sweeping influenza, cholera, or typhus epidemics that ravaged the community. You will also find tragic deaths from fires, drowning, or accidents, just as you will find elders who passed away peacefully in their sleep. And there's everything and anything in between. These are the stories that cemeteries tell. They tell the stories of a community and those who lived within it. Now, the grave markers found in Union Cemetery also range from elaborate decorative stones to simple, almost non-existent markers. And as I walked around, I couldn't help but notice such an eclectic mix of monuments and grave markers that the cemetery has. They give but a mere snapshot of the lives of those who are buried there. Union Cemetery continues to grow, with the new areas found primarily in the west side. There's a dedicated veterans section in the northern part, which is surrounded by mature cedar trees. In the southeast corner of the cemetery, you will find the caretaker's cottage, the cemetery chapel, and the south cemetery gates. There's also a brick vault for storage nestled between the cottage and the chapel. Now, the cottage is a modest two-story frame cottage, whereas the chapel is a Victorian chapel with pointed arch windows and decorative bargeboard trim. The gates are likely from the 1920s and are made of rubble stone with concrete caps. The ironwork of the gates has decorative maple leaves throughout and gives a certain elegance to that southeast corner. It is this cluster of buildings that helps tell part of the story of the cemetery and will be the focus of our podcast today. I had the chance to speak with Phil Carter, who is president of the Port Hope ACO branch, and Ed Pameter, who is a member. Together, they were able to tell me a little bit more about the history of the building and how it came into their possession. We will start with Ed, who explains how the branch took over the properties.
A number of years ago, the cemetery built a home for their caretaker. His widow had finally died, and the little cottage was empty, and the town had no use for it. An empty house in the cemetery is not a good rental proposition. And we approached them about renting the building to use as an office and for storage. They thought that would be a good idea as long as we updated it and maintained it. So that's what we did. We have a long-term lease on it, and we put a new roof on and insulated it and rewired it, etc. And now it works very well. We have our meetings there. We keep our archives there, and the jazz festival people meet there, and the Wesleyville people meet there, so forth. So it gets a good workout.
When then asked to explain what makes these buildings special to the community, Ed had this to add.
I think the fact that it's about 30 acres sitting beside the main road into Port Hope, which is Toronto Road coming off the 401, and it's well landscaped, well maintained. It has now has a black picket fence down most of it, except when you get to the south part, which is sort of our venue, and we restored the wire fence with the maple leaves on the top of it.
Phil echoed many of these same points, but had this to say about some of the details of the building and one way in which the building is being used by the branch today.
We also took on the chapel, which was a designated building. It's a chapel that isn't used anymore as a chapel. A lovely old building. And again, the condition there was we could use it so long as we maintained it. And so we've been restoring that as well. Plus we restored the gates to the cemetery. So we kind of look after the buildings in the cemetery in exchange for being able to use them. The chapel we use for storing artifacts for our antiques and artifacts auction, which we have once a year.
I've heard that's a very successful event for your branch.
It is, very successful. And we've been doing it now, I guess 5 or 6 years now. No, maybe more like 7 now that I think about it. Very successful, yeah. And people donate their cast-offs and antiques, and in return we auction them and they get a charitable donation. And it works very well, and we get a huge audience that comes to buy the stuff because it's often very good stuff.
The money raised from this auction, as well as house tours and garden tours offered by the branch, all support the efforts of local heritage projects and in part contribute to the ongoing maintenance of the caretaker's building. There are a lot of volunteer hours that goes into these events, but there is also a lot of volunteer hours that went into the restoration of the building. In fact, it was all done with volunteer labor. One interesting thing about the building is its color. When volunteers were scraping back the paint, they were able to uncover the color that they believed it was for most of its life. And so when they were repainting it, they did it in that color. Now, as I mentioned before, the building is used today as a headquarters. So I will pick up our conversation from where I asked Phil how the space was working out for them.
Oh, they're good. It's a tiny little room. It's good for meetings. And it has two other little offices that we keep our records in, a little kitchen and a bathroom. And the meeting room is used fairly frequently. I was just there last night for a jazz board meeting. And so we let it leave it for other people as well as ACO. And no, it's in good shape, and it's heated, and the chapel is not heated. It's it was never heated, which is why it doesn't get used very much. But it's a good storeroom and for us, and again, we maintain it. We had to rebuild the whole foundation, for instance, we did. And we donate money to that, and so on.
Yes, I noticed that the chapel was on brick, and the caretaker's home was on a stone foundation.
Yeah.
Was the brick part of the restoration process?
Yeah, well, the chapel has some stone and some brick. But yeah, we redid all the brick. We rebuilt the brick on the gates, for instance. So, you know, we, as I say, that's part of where our money goes.
And the bell on top of the chapel, has that always been there?
Yeah, as far as I know.
It looks like it's in really good shape.
It is. I mean, no, it's the chapel is always a lovely little building. And before we before the amalgamation of Port Hope, there was Hope Township, and the cemetery was technically in Hope Township. And it was one of the four buildings in Hope Township that were designated. There were only four, and it was one of the four.
I then asked Phil if he knew of any famous people buried in the cemetery, and he mentioned he thought there was a mass grave from the cholera epidemic, but he didn't know for certain. Now, Ed, on the other hand, had a little more to offer and told me these stories.
Well, the great Farini, who walked on the tightrope across the Ganaraska River, is buried there. And there is one of the Foots, who is related to Major Foot from World War I fame, and that gives to lots of funny little jokes about the fact that there's only one Foot in the cemetery and so forth. It has a very large area where the old Anglican clergy are buried. It was opened in about 1880 and is still going strong.
I was curious about this topic, so I did some digging myself online. Now, if anyone is interested in seeing where their ancestors or friends may be found in the cemetery, or you just have a general curiosity for this kind of thing, then you're in luck. There's a great website out there called Find a Grave, and it's at www.findagrave.com. There are over 1 million entries on the site, and the locations go all over North America. Now, if you look at Union Cemetery in Port Hope in particular, there are 213 entries there right now. The records provide a brief bio, and many have pictures included of the headstones. You can even filter for famous people. When I did this for Union Cemetery, two records showed up. The first entry was Stanley Roy Crossett. He was a professional hockey player who played for the Port Hope Eagles and then the Philadelphia Quakers from 1930 to 1931. After one season, he left hockey to run a taxi service with his wife. The second was the gentleman that Ed mentioned, whose full name was William Leonard Hunt. Known as the Great Farini, he was considered one of the greatest figures in Canadian show business. The entry goes on to say, a few years after moving to Bowmanville, a circus came to the area, and Hunt decided that he just had to see it. The young boy was so impressed that it was from that day on he decided he surely would enter that world. He soon began to develop his muscles and practice anything from acrobatics to carrying heavy objects on his back. The bio goes on to tell the tale of his performance life, where it says, on October 1, 1859, Hunt, who was now 21 years of age and taking the stage name of Signor Farini, later the Great Farini, undertook his first professional high-wire performance in Port Hope, Ontario. The act was such a success that he was given a huge party in the town's city hall. It was here that he would eventually live for the rest of his life. On August 15, 1860, Hunt made his debut performance on the high wire over Niagara Falls. An entry goes on to tell the story of the rest of his career, which I couldn't help but read the whole thing, as it was fascinating to say the least. The website is very interesting, especially for those who have a keen interest in genealogy, so I encourage you all to have a look at it. Well, that brings us to the end of our podcast. I would like to thank Kayla Jonas Galvin for helping me with the interview, and a big thanks to Phil Carter and Ed Pameter for taking the time to speak with me. Ed wanted everyone to know that the cemetery is open for people to enjoy, so feel free to come by, take a lovely walk, a jog, or just sit around and enjoy the serene environment. If you want to learn more about the Architectural Conservancy of Ontario and its involvement with the preservation and conservation of buildings all over Ontario, the ACO is celebrating its 80th anniversary by putting together a book. This book will feature 80 buildings the organization has had a hand in saving over the last 80 years. Now, the Building Stories episode you heard today is just one that will be included, but there are many more stories to discover. You can get the book starting in November 2013 by ordering it online at their website. The Building Stories podcast series could not have been made possible without our sponsors, so a big thank you to the Architectural Conservancy of Ontario, the Heritage Resource Centre at the University of Waterloo, the Centre for Community Mapping, the Computer Systems Group at the University of Waterloo, and the Government of Ontario. If you have any comments, we would love to hear from you. You can email the Building Stories team at info@buildingstories.co or send them a tweet at Building Stories, which is BLDG_stories, and of course you can find them on Facebook under the Building Stories Facebook page. These podcasts have been written, produced, and hosted by myself, Amy Barnes, and I'd like to take this last moment to thank you all for listening.